The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nick Watt, and welcome to Politics Weekly. Well, we've got our slide rules out here as we discuss Alistair Darling's first budget as Chancellor. Even his strongest admirers would admit that the Chancellor's performance was less than dazzling. David Cameron was particularly cutting.
It is not difficult to see what is wrong with this budget. It is not just that it was, on the whole, a dire list of reviews and re-announcements delivered with all the excitement of someone reading out a telephone directory, although that didn't help.
Now, we're charitable souls here at Politics Weekly, so we would never be that rude about such a senior member of the Cabinet. But we don't duck the tough questions, and so we're going to ask where the budget leaves the Chancellor after a tricky start to his new job in the autumn. We'll also be asking how the taxpayer has fared and discuss where the budget leaves Labour and the Conservatives as they battle it out in the run-up to the next election. For those of us who find that Budget Day brings back unfortunate memories of maths O-level, help is at hand. Politics Weekly has tracked down three giants from the Westminster and media world to guide us through the budget minefield. We have Angela Eagle, the Treasury Minister, who joins us down the line from the heart of Whitehall. We're sticklers for accuracy here at Politics Weekly, and so we can give Angela her full title, which is the Exchequer Secretary to Her Majesty's Treasury. From the other side of the House of Commons, we have Philip Hammond, the Conservative MP and Shadow Chief Secretary to the Treasury. Philip is the numbers man in the Shadow Treasury team and can usually be found in a darkened basement surrounded by pie charts and graphs. We also have Bill Keegan, the Observer's veteran economics commentator. Bill is well placed to award Alistair Darling marks out of 10 because he has recently conducted a series of interviews with Britain's surviving chancellors. And finally, we hear from Simon Hoggett, the Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, who describes Darling's performance in the Commons. Marks out of 10 for the new Chancellor, please. Bill.
7 out of 10 for a specific reason I'll explain later.
Philip.
Well, if he was trying to be boring, which some of the press was speculating beforehand, then it must be 10 out of 10 for boringness.
Angela.
10 out of 10. He was calm, cool and collected.
Thank you for that. Well, we asked Simon Hoggett to describe the scenes when Alistair Darling stood up in the Commons at shortly after 12:30 on Wednesday.
Just come out of the chamber watching the budget speech and listening to the responses from David Cameron and from Nick Clegg, the Liberal Democrat leader. And it was Clegg who said that he'd watched the Prime Minister's lips throughout the whole session and he'd seen that they were practically not moving at all. He was saying that he was a great ventriloquist actor. And I must say I agreed with him because, you know, every Gordon Brown budget began with a description of this earthly paradise in which we live, thanks to Gordon Brown's brilliant stewardship of the economy. And he's done it again, just at a time when everyone's saying, look, all the figures, the debt figures, the unemployment figures are bad, the inflation figures are bad, everything is going wrong for the economy. Here was Alistair Darling saying once again that we were in better shape than any other major country in the entire world. He painted a picture of stability, of growth slightly down a little bit next year, but of course that's the fault of the global economy, nothing to do with him. So that was very, very startling stuff, and the Tories could hardly believe it. One thing that actually stopped him being shouted down was that it was a very, very boringly delivered speech. As everybody knows, he is a very, very boring speaker. And what really startled me was that Lord Howe, used to be Sir Geoffrey Howe, previously held the record as most boring Chancellor of the Exchequer. Well, he was sitting up in the Peers Gallery and he was fast asleep almost throughout the entire speech. Now and again he'd wake up, he'd look down, see that Alistair Darling was still speaking and go straight back to sleep again. In fact, it wasn't so much sleeping as hibernation, I thought. He then went on with these extraordinary claims that we would be bouncing back. He implied that by the end of the year we would be back to normal, we were going to weather these storms and so on. The Tories simply at some point just began talking among themselves. That's the sound that every public speaker dreads, which is when people think it's more interesting to talk to their neighbour than to listen to what's being said right in front of them.
That was Simon Hoggett. Angela, so even Geoffrey Howe, a former Chancellor who should understand every word of a budget, appeared to fall asleep. Your boss wasn't very inspiring, was he?
Well, this is a budget for stability in uncertain times. It's not about being exciting and keeping Geoffrey Howe awake, of all things. It's about ensuring that we can get the economy to come out of the shocks that are happening in the world economy in the best shape possible. And Alistair made sure that we were in the best shape possible to do that. Under the Tories, the UK used to be the first in and the last out of any recession, and Geoffrey Howe was responsible for that. But in the last 10 years, we've escaped recessions despite all sorts of world crises, and we're intending to ensure that that happens again.
Bill, now you know a thing or two about chancellors. Was that a boring performance? And if it was a boring performance, maybe boring is what we need at the moment.
It was fairly boring, and that was what was needed. I mean, this government, there have been so many problems over the last 6 months, Northern Rock and so on. You wanted a nice boring budget, and you got it. Now, my suspicion why Geoffrey Howe fell asleep is this, that I think he would have been excited if taxes had been raised, because in 1981, when the economy was in recession, he famously raised taxes, causing my old friend Ian Gilmore and others to throw out their hands in despair, and unemployment went on rising until 1986. Now, the reason I give him 7 out of 10 is that at a time like this, with the credit squeeze and, you know, God knows what out there yet, with the economy patently slowing down, and whatever his forecasts say, there is certainly a danger of recession, although I think it's only a danger, it would have been wrong to clobber the economy on the head. So from a macroeconomic point of view, he did not raise taxes. He took it on the chin, borrowing's going up. An old-fashioned Keynesian like me, that is fine and what's required.
Philip, that's interesting that Bill is saying 7 out of 10 for Alistair Darling. These are difficult times. Your leader, David Cameron, made a joke saying it was as if the Chancellor was reading out from a telephone directory. But we need to be deadly serious about the state of the economy, don't we?
Well, Alistair Darling had very little room for manoeuvre yesterday, so he spent 50 minutes saying very little, and that's why it felt very boring in the chamber, to be perfectly honest about it. But David Cameron also said that it wouldn't be fair to blame Alistair Darling for the position we're in. He's now got to deal with the situation that he has in front of him. And the person responsible for getting us to this position was also on the bench yesterday, sitting next to him, the Prime Minister. He's the man who borrowed through the years of economic growth when other countries were paying down debt, making themselves lean, mean and fit to deal with problems ahead. The Republic of Ireland, for example, over the last few years has surged ahead of us, much higher income per capita, no net public debt, ready to face more difficult times ahead. And almost uniquely in the developed world, we are not in a position to respond macroeconomically, as Bill has said, to the tougher economic times. All economic theory would be telling Alistair Darling that he should have come to the Commons yesterday and cut taxes to keep the economy underpinned. But he can't do that because his predecessor borrowed too much money and now he's up against his credit limit.
OK, thanks for that.
They didn't fix the roof when the sun was shining. And what better metaphor than today when it started to blow off at number 11 Downing Street? What we needed in this budget was real leadership and a serious plan to get this country out of the mess that they've made. What we need is a government that helps people when times are tough. Instead, we've got a government that kicks them when they're down.
Even the government would admit that the Chancellor did not exactly present the nation with tidings of joy. He announced a cut in the forecast for economic growth, raised the inflation forecast, and announced an increase in borrowing. For those of you with wet towels wrapped around your heads, that combination means that we face tax increases or more borrowing unless economic growth picks up in the years to come, which the Chancellor says will happen. Bill, you're the Observer's economic boffin. What's going on with the economy?
The economy has slowed down quite sharply after many years of reasonable growth. Even the Treasury's own forecasts show a halving in the rate of growth of domestic demand, which is mainly consumer spending, this year as opposed to last year. And, of course, it could be worse, and we don't know. But what's really happened in the light of what we've just said, it's now over. It's back to the Bank of England. He hasn't cut taxes, but thank goodness he didn't raise them overall. I know he raised certain taxes and lowered others. So it's up to the Bank of England now to watch this. But the Bank of England is worried about short-term inflation, food prices, petrol and so on, and probably won't reduce interest rates as much as some people might like. So, I mean, I do think we're in choppy waters.
So, Angela, we're in choppy waters.
Well, the Chancellor has said that we're in the middle of a global economic turbulence. But he also said, and this is pointed out by the results we've had in the last 10 years, that the UK economy is now more resilient than it's ever been. And we hope that we can bounce back from economic turbulence by preparing the country, looking through the short term to medium term for more growth, which is why it's important that we keep investing in the public infrastructure, in transport infrastructure. That's why the fiscal rules are so important, so that we can ensure that we carry on making investments for the future, so when the economy does recover, we'll be in a good position to exploit it. We have much more flexible capital markets. markets and product markets than we used to. We will be first out of any slowdown rather than last out, as we used to be under the Conservatives.
Philip Hammond is shaking his head.
Angela asserts that we're in robust shape to weather the storm, and that's Alistair Darling and Gordon Brown's line. But listen to what some other people say. Alan Greenspan says the UK economy is more exposed than the US economy. The IMF said the UK slowdown will be twice as large as any other G7 country. And Goldman Sachs, who the government hired to advise it, says the UK is slowing more than the rest of Europe. All the independent commentators have spotted that because of the way Gordon Brown has piled up debt during a boom, has not prepared Britain to deal with these more difficult times ahead. That is likely to mean that the slowdown here is longer and more painful than in other countries, and certainly longer and more painful than it needs to be if he had built up reserves during the good times to give himself more room for fiscal manoeuvre as the economy enters choppier waters.
Angela, I think you wanted to come in.
Well, I was saying that we had the largest growth in the G7 last year. We've created 3 million more jobs. The slowdown is relevant to how quick you were going before. The important thing is how quickly we can get through this. And I have to say that it's not true, as the Conservatives say, that somehow we've been neglecting the roof of the buildings and we've not been fixing it in sunny times. We had to completely repair the foundations because of what we were left with when we were elected 10 years ago. We had a public realm, very, very low investment, total neglect of transport infrastructure. Without the sustainable investment rule, if we had Conservatives, we wouldn't be able to afford Crossrail. We wouldn't be able to put the money into infrastructure to build on the next level of growth. That's what we're doing, preparing the economy for the upturn.
Bill Keegan's going to come in.
It's been a long time coming, this. You look around the state of the country, you look at how many miles are actually high-speed rail. Now, this government has been in for 11 years, and it's just getting round to this. I think they made a huge strategic mistake in being so slow to get their act together on investment early on.
But Angela, can I just ask you this point, that it may be that Britain's infrastructure was not exactly stunning in 1997.
0.6% of GDP they used to spend. We're spending 2%.
But the public finances were in a reasonable position, weren't they? And you had a pretty good sort of economic, well, we're not allowed to use the word boom, but steady growth, I think we could say, over the last decade. And what do you say to this Tory point that it was in that period that you should have been sort of mending the fence and mending the roof and not going on a sort of a spending and borrowing
spree? Well, first of all, we paid off huge amounts of debt inherited from the Conservatives. People say that we're close to the fiscal rules. The Conservatives would have missed the fiscal rules by $240 billion in their last economic cycle. We have invested in paying off debt. We've invested in public infrastructure. We've taken 2 million pensioners out of poverty. We've taken 600,000 children out of poverty. We've rebuilt our schools and hospital infrastructure. That's what our values are. We inherited a situation where there'd been a tripling of child poverty and complete neglect of the public realm. We've put that right. That's building a roof and making sure that the house can withstand any economic storms that are to come.
They haven't reformed the way public services are delivered so that all this can be sustainable for the future and compatible with solid economic growth. They haven't done radical welfare reform, something which Tony Blair promised in 1997. We've still got 5 million people of working age on out-of-work benefits 10 years after Labour came into power.
OK, thanks for that.
After 11 years in government, Labour today has completed its fiscal fusion with the Conservative Party. Both the parties believe in the same kind of budget. The kind of budget that kowtows to vested interests but fleeces the average family.
Yep.
The kind of budget that keeps tax loopholes for the super rich but closes in mercilessly on single mothers who've been overpaid tax credits. The kind of budget that uses green taxes as an excuse to take more money from the kitty of low earners. This is not a green budget. This is not a people's budget. This is a tinkering contrick budget that protects the rich and abandons the poor.
Yes, that was the Lib Dem leader, Nick Clegg, attacking the government and reminding us that budgets are deeply political events. Bill, tell me, is this a budget that will change the political weather? On the one hand, we have the Chancellor saying Britain is facing economic uncertainty, which started in the US, and I am the man best placed to take us through the storm. On the other hand, we have the Tories saying that Britain, this government, should have prepared for the downturn when the sun was shining. Whose argument will prevail?
One thing I love about this budget is it brings back happy memories. It's an old-fashioned booze and tobacco budget. You know, it's great stuff. We used to have these and we lost them. Where I would slightly differ, I think, from Philip, although I understand the point about the roof and they've sailed close to the wind. And let us point out that on the fiscal rules, they're pretty close to the limits. And there are certain things that haven't yet got on that balance sheet. Now, Northern Rock's a separate issue, but the Office for National Statistics has not yet come to a decision about putting further private finance things on the budget. So they're very close. But given that, I know that the deficit looks high, but it's a lot lower than it has been in the past. And I think these things are artificial. And if there were to be a slump, and if people were saving and not spending, then I would have no problem with the government lowering taxes to get out of that.
Angela, this is potentially quite a big political moment for this government, isn't it? We're a year or perhaps 2 years away from the next general election. Bill Clinton's campaign manager famously said, "It's the economy, stupid." Things aren't looking rosy. Chancellor struggling to establish his reputation. Bit tricky, isn't it?
Well, it's a responsible budget. It's focusing on stability for the future. And we will, I think, be able to persuade the electorate that we're the people to be trusted to look after the economy, as we have done in the last 10 years, and deliver on some of our social beliefs too, in the continuing the fight against poverty, also to begin to restructure our economy to face the challenges of climate change, which we haven't talked about that today, but the Chancellor did do some pretty radical things to prepare us for the future in that way too.
Now, Philip, as a responsible Shadow Chief Secretary of the Treasury, you obviously don't want to talk the economy down. But a struggling economy is, how can one put this politely, good news for an opposition. But you have to be careful, don't you?
We certainly don't want to talk the economy down, and we don't want to inherit a shipwreck of an economy. But let's look at what's happened here. Gordon Brown inherited in 1997 a strongly growing economy. We'd already had, 19 quarters of strong economic growth. Unemployment was falling sharply. Inflation was lower in 1997 than it is now. The economy was doing very well. To his credit, he didn't blow all that away, as previous Labour governments have done almost immediately on coming into office. But what he hasn't done is build on that over his 10-year period in the Treasury to prepare the economy for the future. And that is a missed opportunity, which I think when people look back from the perspective of more difficult economic times now, they will really regret that we did not use that 10 years to restructure our public services, for example. It's very difficult to ask people delivering public services to reform the way they work when their budgets are only growing at 1.9% a year. It would have been much easier to get real reform at a time when budgets were growing quite fast and the money was there to ease that transition. It's going to be much more difficult now.
But Philip, are the Conservatives slightly changing tack? Under George Osborne in the last few years, you moderated your positions on tax and spending, which is that you said you would match the government's spending commitments over the next cycle.
Over the CSR period that the government have already announced, which takes us to 2010-11, they have shared the proceeds of growth. They've said that public spending will grow more slowly than the growth rate of the economy. And we've said, because they're doing that, we will match those.
And you've also said no unfunded tax cuts. But on both those points, there's quite a lot of pressure to move, isn't there? And hints that Osborne might be moving.
We haven't made any unfunded tax pledges, Angela, and I'll say it again today. We will not make unfunded upfront tax cut promises, because that is not a responsible thing to do. The only way that we'll be able to cut taxes sustainably over the medium term is to share the proceeds of growth, to focus on economic and fiscal stability first, and as the economy grows, share the proceeds of that growth between increasing real-term spending on public services, but at a slower rate than the growth rate of the economy, and then using the headroom that's left to cut taxes and also to pay down some of this mountain of debt that's being built up, because that will also have to be a factor that we take into account.
Angela, the £10 billion figure, how did you reach that? Because I know the Conservatives are disputing it.
Cutting corporation tax to 27 pence, introducing the transferable marriage tax allowance, increasing the working tax credit, the inheritance tax changes, raising stamp duty threshold. They've also called for more funding for the armed forces, additional drugs for thousands of stroke patients, high-speed rail pilot schemes. There's an entire list of them.
Angela,
is that the Conservative Party spraying out unfunded tax pledges.
Well, I'm the guardian
all
of our
over
of,
the place.
I'm the guardian of our spending commitments.
Well, you should get a grip of your shadow cabinet,
and I can tell you,
Philip,
Angela, that nothing gets past us unless it is funded. You talked about the corporation tax rate, cutting the corporation tax rate. That would be paid for entirely by reducing allowances and exemptions. So it would be a broader-based corporation tax system with a lower rate and fewer exemptions and allowances. The figures have been prepared by Grant Thornton, leading firm of accountants. They are available. We're very happy to share them with you.
The important thing here is that what the shadow cabinet have got to realise is that you cannot just make unfunded tax pledges in the way that they have.
Don't.
We've had Andrew Lansley saying that he's going to have billions of pounds of additional extra NHS spending. David Cameron's going around saying there's going to be a larger army. He wants light rail extended.
Well, I think that's being disputed by Philip Hammond, but I'm going to call in Bill Keegan to be the impartial referee in this matter. Bill Keegan.
There is something what they both say, and I think Philip is actually pretty rigorous, but colleagues often tend to speak off the cuff and embarrass shadow chancellors and chief secretaries. The point I would like to make is, obviously, David Cameron was being frivolous yesterday when saying the tax burden was very high. It's actually relatively low historically, the so-called burden. What worries me is that that's one of the reasons the country's in the state it's in, that the government's been too nervous to spend. And when it has spent, it's put most of it into the health service, and not with good results. So I actually think we ought to be much nearer Scandinavian levels, but I fear that the public sector has to a considerable extent lost the trust of the people about how it spends money, and this is a real worry for me in the future.
One final quick question for Bill before we go. You mentioned that 1981 budget of Geoffrey Howe. We're still talking about that. Will we be talking about the 2008 budget in 27 years' time?
I don't see it myself.
Thanks for that. Well, that's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, Treasury Minister Angela Eagle, the Conservative Treasury spokesman Philip Hammond, and the Observer columnist Bill Keegan. Politics Weekly was produced by Ian Chambers. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.